Hello, WNPR. This is Kyone Wolf. How may I help you? I'm sorry, please hold. WNPR, this is Kyone Wolf. How may I... I'm sorry, please hold. Hi, this is Kyone Wolf. How may I help you? I'm sorry, please hold.
Hey, Kyone. What's happening?
It's Kyone.
That's what I said. Want you to go ahead and move your desk against the wall. We're gonna go ahead and add some hot desking and some huddle spaces. Maybe go ahead and design some ergonomic cul-de-sacs for increased contrast and interactivity levels. So, we need you to move out of the high traffic area.
Are you trying to tell me that I'm not important, or...?
I didn't say that. We just want you to go ahead and have time to get the cover sheets on the TPS reports, you know, without a lot of interruptions.
But that's not even my job. Whenever I try to do my job, you interrupt me with all this crap about cover sheets or moving my desk. And yesterday it was, hey, what are all those other people doing?
Oh, they're putting on our new wearable computer clothing so they can go ahead and be online and working in an idea-sparking environment 24/7. That's the whole new trend around here.
How about me? How come I don't get to be totally imprisoned by my job?
Well, for now, we just need you to go ahead and get the cover sheets on.
No, I'm too important to be confined to some dumb desk. I want one of those suits that takes over your life. Wait a minute, are those definitely the only two choices here?
Yeah. Can I have your stapler after you're digitized into the NCOM mainframe?
No, you may not. Today on our show, is work the best place to work, or is it better to work anywhere and everywhere? Are those the only two choices? Get away from my stapler, Tucker! And now he loses so much time driving home to use the bathroom. Colin McEnroe.
I just don't like the one here. I like a fresh bowl. All right, so we are going to talk about the spaces where you work. Tucker Ives does a great Gary Cole in Office Space impersonation. I think that needs to be said. It needs to be said publicly and importantly. I also want to say as we go along here today, the conversation is going to be about, is work the best place to work? And what do we even mean when we say work, as in workplace, workspace? What is that? And we'd love to have you be part of the conversation. We'd love you to go ahead and be part of the conversation. All right, so you just go ahead and call 860-275-7266. Hopefully, I'll be able to get out of the habit of doing that. 860-275-7266. Tweetmaster Greg Hill is in the house, so he will also tweet at you at WNPR Colin. Keep an eye on that, and you can tweet at him at WNPR Colin. You may tweet at him. So we're going to start out with the actual sort of workspace itself. As we go along here, we're also going to talk about sort of the notion that some people can very easily be dispersed into virtual workspaces, that people don't really need to be at the office. And we'll be talking to the author of a book called, a co-author of a book called Remote Office Not Required. We'll also talk later to Josh Benton from the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University, talk about the way in which interruptions at work may soon be replaced or have already been replaced by interruptions on your phone or on your iPad or whatever it is you're using, that the idea that you can go off somewhere to Starbucks or to your house and not be interrupted is not true. Let's begin with physical space itself. Most people still go to some physical space. They congregate. They do work together. So joining us here in the studio is Alex Lopatinsky, who's an architect and studio director and senior associate with JCJ Architecture, and David Arai. He is the president of Mayer Design Group in Hartford. They just both got a high speed, and I mean 90-second walk through our office space. Probably not enough to make a really big assessment. But I'm going to ask you guys even just to sort of react to an email we got. I was sort of soliciting some comments just from the outside world. And so this guy, Adam, writes, I rarely, if ever, set foot in my office, and I love it because the building is completely devoid of inspiration, creativity, youth, and quality snacks. Unless I quit my current job and become an unpaid Google intern, I see very little opportunity to ever experience a work environment that actually fosters the kind of quality work I'm expected to perform. With stark white walls, a stale smell in the air, and isolated sub-offices filled with sad, sad people, it resembles a low-budget dog kennel more than a place of business. I'm afraid to invite clients because it's like trying to take a date back to your mom's house. I'm 29. First of all, I think, you know, your reputations, I'll start with you, Alex, your reputations and your professional status is predicated on the notion that he's wrong. It doesn't have to be like that. But why is it like that? Why is he working someplace that he feels so estranged from?
I truly believe that with the changing understanding of our workplace, that only recently in the last decade or so have we really thought about what that workplace is as it relates to what you actually do. It is probably some legacy left over from a time where we were much more interested in designing a workspace that allows that individual to perform their work individually and then commune in a conference room with a bunch of people. Today, we are looking at designing spaces by first asking the organization about what is it that your folks do to get their work done? What is it that's going to make them much more productive to get their work done? And you're also talking about different generations working in the workspace, having different expectations about how they work, and technology is impacting that. So all these other things that influence how we design are now being brought to light in how we look at designing space. So it doesn't have to be the way this gentleman described his workspace at all.
Let me just follow up on one thing you said. We have so much to talk about here today, but do people who own and run or make decisions about the office space in businesses, do they really know how they do what they do and what kind of space that they need for it? In other words, you know, some people might answer that question. David's already laughing at that idea. Some people will answer that question reflexively. Yes, I have 18 employees and I need them all sitting right here where I can, you know, I mean, people have ideas about what they need that may not correspond to the reality you ultimately divine from them.
That is very true and it often happens. But what we're finding with our clients is that when we sit down with them at the beginning of a design process and literally ask them to dig deeper into that, all of a sudden things are uncovered that they probably didn't realize in painting that big broad brush expectation.
You know, David, is it also, I mean, I don't know. I obviously what you want to do is design an ideal workspace for a group of people who are trying to do work together. But in some ways, it seems to me, at least for some places, what you really need to design is a certain level of chaos so that things happen serendipitously, too. You can't, I mean, where we work, you just walk through it. It's a pretty messed up layout in a lot of ways. But it kind of forces us out of our seats and into, I've even discovered in your profession, there is a phrase, collision spaces. You know, places where we're going to bump into one another and mutually update one another, have conversations that we didn't necessarily plan. Order might not be the only goal that you have, depending on the kind of work that you're designing for.
Right. I agree with that because you have a space. You have to create a space that people can work in. And it's not necessarily just sitting in your cube all day long because people don't do that anymore. That's not how work occurs. And kind of I don't know if you can design for serendipity. You can get lucky and have it occur. But you have to focus in on all the different parts and pieces of what those people do. And you sit down and you ask the people that are involved in their workforce, what are they doing? What kind of functions are they doing, their tasks? So that you can try and arrange a space that works for them and that starts to, you know, have the equipment in the right place, have the right kind of spaces for the right kind of people, and have the flexibility in the spaces that you're designing so that you don't feel like the gentleman you interjected at the beginning, that they feel like they're in this sterile environment and they're in this white box and they don't like being there.
We'd love to have you be part of this conversation. What's your workspace like? Does it work for you? Does it not work for you? 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. So, David or I, imagine that I am your client, and I have a pretty reflexive understanding of what I think my office space needs to be. I've got 18 people. I need them at their desks. I need to be able to see what they're doing. I mean, to make sure they're not goofing off. You know, they get 45 minutes for lunch and they can get back in there and do their work. And you're listening to me. What kinds of questions would you be asking me? How would you be exploring with me? And obviously, eventually, you're going to want to talk to some of those employees as well. But exploring with me what it is I really need.
I'm going to ask you what you do because businesses are all different. Mm. You know, if you're a design firm, you're doing something completely different than if you're a call center. So I need to know what it is that these people are doing for 8 hours a day or 10 hours a day or however long they're working. And, you know, you need to know, do they need large spaces? Do they need quiet around them? Do they need, you know, what are their actual requirements for their physical job? But then you have to start thinking about the people in general and they're all people. What do they need to be comfortable in this space?
Well, this is a really important question to me. And I you know, Alex enumerated a whole bunch of different variables that will affect how offices need to be laid out and how workspace needs to go. But I think another one of those variables really is the personality. I mean, some of it's generational, as you said. Yeah. But personality types are really important. And we get into the digital and virtual office part of this conversation, which will be in the second half of the show. I think that's going to become even more clear. But, I mean, even dealing with individual people, you overheard a conversation as we were going on the air. Patrick Scahill used to be a producer on this show. He and I didn't really ever need to see each other. I mean, well, once in a while. But, I mean, we're both Vulcans. We can communicate by email. We're completely happy that way. You know, we're sitting, I don't know, maybe 20 yards apart from one another, down a hall, around a corner. But rarely was it necessary for me to walk down and actually talk to Patrick. We could just email back and forth all day, and we kind of understood each other. Now, with Wolfie, I really need to talk to Wolfie. I need to talk to her face-to-face. I need to actually see how much color is in her cheeks given a certain thing. I mean, there's like about 95 different emotional and physical indicators that Wolfie gives off on any given conversation. And we tried to do something with email yesterday, and I knew at the end of it, it was a disaster. It wasn't a big complicated thing, but I knew I didn't give her the right answer, and I didn't get a chance to give it in the right tone. And all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, Alex, maybe we could just say a little bit about personality, too.
Sure.
They're human beings that we're designing for.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we all have different behavior types. Some of us like to work individually in a quiet space. Some of us need to be around people to get our ideas across, and doesn't suffice to send an email. You have to pick up the phone or get together with them in a conference room. And how does your work environments support those behaviors is important to making everybody successful and promoting good work habits and you know, ultimately being productive in your job and adding value to your organization. So behavior certainly is part of it, and understanding as we design the space what different behavior types we may be dealing with and providing those spaces to accommodate that work style. So, for example, if there's somebody in your organization that really needs to meet with somebody, provide them with a breakout space that they can grab that other person and sit down in a conference room with, whether it's an enclosed conference room with a door or a open conferencing area near your workstations, or even, you know, designing the kitchenette with a collaborative counter where you can sit down as you're making coffee to chat with somebody. So their behavior is definitely something to take into consideration.
You know, David, there seem to be trends that pop up in office design. Oh, we've got a call from Matt in West Haven. I'll take that call in just a second. Trends that pop up in office design. One of them, she just kind of alluded to, which is kind of a lot of open spaces, open flowing spaces. A lot of the offices around where we're sitting right now here at WNPR don't have doors that can close and don't have walls that go all the way to the top. So Mr. Dankowski and I have adjoining offices. There's about a foot or a foot and a half of space between the wall and the ceiling so that basically we can hear every word of every conversation that either one of us has all day long. And if anybody here needs to have that kind of private closed door meeting, the only places we can really go are right where you're sitting right now, the radio studio, because it has a door that shuts. It has like three microphones, which is really disturbing if you're having a super private conversation, but they're usually dead. But somehow or there, somebody got this idea that there a lot of things should be open and that there shouldn't, you know, my door is always open. Well, it should sort of be like that. Is that, first of all, is that some kind of, I don't know, is it a trend? Is it waxing? Is it waning? Where does all that thinking come from?
The thinking comes from just trying to keep space, keep people working together. And actually, I think more than that, it actually comes from trying to see how many people you can actually cram into one space. Hmm. Because you're talking about, you know, if you have an office, you're talking 100, 120 square feet of space. But if you stick someone in a cubicle that has 4 foot high walls, it might only be 36 square feet. So all of a sudden, you're tripling your occupant load. And when you're paying however many hundreds of dollars a month for rent, or thousands, you want to maximize that space. Mm-hmm. And that's what, I mean, the bottom line is really in everything we do, and I'm sure Alex would agree with me, at the end of the day, it's always the bottom line. It's not how great can this be? It's how much is it going to cost?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I think it's important to note that when you are doing that and cramming as many people into that space, you have to think about the other functions that are required to get their work done. It's not just the cubicle that they sit in.
Right, exactly.
So there's a trade-off.
I mean, you walked past the sort of that communal, that big workspace that we have where Betsy and Kyun and Jeff Cohn and a lot of our reporters and producers all, if they were chickens, I think PETA would be after us. It's not enough space, basically. All right. So and probably there is some kind of basic allotment of personal space that people ought to have, right? I mean, a little bit of air between one another.
Yeah, you need – obviously, you don't want to put people side by side. They'll never get anything done. And there are trade-offs because
– That's what we do.
It's what everyone does. Right. I mean, it's just it's the nature of the dollar, basically, at the end of the day. But you need some space between people. They need to be able to have a conversation. And if you start just racking them in like dominoes, it only just takes one for the whole thing to fall down.
Let's grab a call from Matt. Once again, our number 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. Our guests are Alex Lipotinsky from JCJ Architecture and David Arai from the Meyer Design Group in Hartford. Here's Matt in West Haven. What's on your mind?
Hi, Colin. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Okay. I think one of the major things about the office that's often overlooked is the lighting. A lot of people can be affected on how good and how bad the lighting is. If there is bad lighting in the space, there have been studies that have shown that it makes the workplace less productive.
They're nodding. They're nodding almost like some kind of mechanical nodding figures. They're nodding so emphatically. So, Alex, you're nodding harder than David right now. You get to take that one first.
I wholeheartedly agree with the caller in that lighting, there are definitely studies out there that good lighting, natural lighting, promotes productivity, therefore leading to the value to the organization. We're definitely seeing that trend in providing much more natural lighting opportunities for the workspace, allowing individuals to even control their own lighting at their workstations by providing them with task lighting so that they're not only dealing with overhead lighting that may or may not be sufficient enough to eliminate the work that they're doing. So it is a key factor in a good work environment.
Yeah, you were nodding too, David. You want to elaborate?
Well, yeah, people want to be able to control their own lighting also, and that's something that we've been working for. I've been in spaces before we designed them where people have actually taped cardboard over the light above their desk. And so that ability to control lighting is important, and Alex is absolutely right. You provide individual controls. You try to have less direct lighting, have it feel more natural. You work on the actual color of the light so it's more like daylight.
That's right.
So that's one of the key things in a good environment.
One of the other trends, and I don't know how much you guys have gotten into this in the design that you're doing, but it's something I was sort of reading about as I surveyed the literature for this show, is, you know, increasingly it probably is true, whether or not we grant the premise of our upcoming guest or not about sort of virtual work, that increasingly people can store an awful lot of their work digitally. So they can walk around with an iPad or a laptop. They can sit down at any computer terminal and pull up Google Docs, stuff like that. So in some offices, it seems that I'm reading more and more about offices where they have, for example, a concierge who, as you come in, will like sort of guide you to something. Yeah, that's the desk you're going to have for the next 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. But don't nest there. It's not your desk. Or sort of offices that themselves can almost be kind of moved around or reconfigured. There isn't necessarily this idea, like if you walk past my office, you see that I am nesting there. I'm nesting like some big, messy bird that defecates on paper. But that basically that model is more and more out of favor and other ideas are in favor. I don't know. Alex, you want to start talking about that?
There's certainly we're responding to the flexible work environment where you don't have individuals that necessarily need a permanent space within their work environment. They need I've heard it called hoteling workstations where, you know, it's a place for you to come in, hook up, do your work for that day if you are in that office, and then leave. And it's a shared space. And helps also in when you're thinking about planning for offices, it reduces the amount of square footage you need for your entire organization when you can double up on space or triple on space for those individuals who work in multiple locations. It's definitely we're actually, as our own organization, is using this too.
Although that I would assume, David, is also a little bit generationally conditioned too. So I'm an old guy. So and so it's hard for me to think, oh, no, really, your iPad or your laptop, that's really your desk. You could be anywhere. Now, it is true that at the beginning of this show, before you heard us go on the air, I was talking about the fact that as a newspaper columnist, which is one of my jobs, I don't ever go to the newspaper, and I have filed from everywhere, including a jungle clearing in the Yucatan that for some reason had Wi-Fi. You know, if there's Wi-Fi, I can file. I'm totally down with that idea. I'm used to that idea. But here, I really do feel as though I need a home. I really need to be somewhere. And that's not exclusively generational. There are all kinds of personality types that need that too. But
yeah, I mean, there's people that need to take stock in their position. And if they don't have their own desk, there's this feeling of insecurity. Because if you don't have your own space at work, what happens the day you come there? Are they going to just tell you to go home because you don't have a job anymore because you don't have a place to put your picture? So there is the danger of that. But there's a lot of people out there, and it's personality driven, and you can't. This is why there isn't just one kind of car out there. Everyone has a different personality. Everyone has a different feeling on things, a different take on how they work. You have to customize it towards those people, and there are people that are perfectly happy to show up and ask the concierge, "Okay, where am I sitting today?" And be happy with that. And then there's people, and I don't know that it's generational. I think it's just the personality. There are people that come to work and they got to have that same desk. And they have to have their same cup of coffee sitting next to their desk, or they're going to feel very insecure about their position. And that's the last thing you want to do.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to add a piece about mobility and using technology. It's not just about the physical environment that you're actually doing your independent work, but it's also the thinking behind taking your laptop or your iPad from your personal workspace and going to sit down with a group of individuals in a meeting or a collaboration effort. And that ability to do that and not feel that you don't have all the stuff that you need to do your work with that team ready at your fingertips, and creating the work environment to support that is important.
Yeah. All right. I want to grab a few calls here before we go to break. Let's see. Let's start with Joanne in West Hartford. Hi, Joanne.
Hello. How are you?
Just fine. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
You're on the air. Go ahead. Fire away.
I have an interesting experience. When I worked for a very large bank in Charlotte, North Carolina, and our division decided, I guess they bumped into a consultant who wanted to rework our space, and what they're going to do is take away a lot of offices and put them into cubicles. So they took the leadership team and tried to convince them that this was a good idea, and we were to go back and sell it to the people we worked with. The people we worked with hated the idea. They said, you know, we work always hoping that someday we'll have an office. It's one of our signs that we're valuable to you. And the leadership team in this bank, they were pretty afraid to speak up about anything. And so when I said, my team doesn't like it, this is how they want it, they were kind of aghast. Said, oh, my goodness, somebody said the emperor has no clothes. So I might suggest that the people who come in to a concierge and are shown to a space who say this is fine, maybe they think so and maybe they don't.
Well,
because I think there's a lot of pressure to say, no, I don't want this. I don't want to be like a rat in a maze.
So, David, I know you've sometimes described what you do as psychology. And she's sort of talking about something I think that's very real. You can be told what the flavor of the month is in design and not necessarily buy into it.
That's definitely correct. I mean, you know, people buy fashions and then and they throw them away the next year. That's why things go out of style. You know, the private office is definitely something a lot of people look forward to obtaining. You know, it's an achievement. It's a milestone in their career. You start taking that away from them, people have a hard time with that. You know, my mother got moved out of private office into a cubicle, and she complained about it until she retired. So, but I don't know that there's a solution to that. You know, there's actual real reasons for not building offices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they cost a lot of money. They're taxed at a different rate. They're more complicated to build. They're less flexible. So there are reasons not to do them.
And I think also, Alex, I mean, once again, reading the literature of your profession, I'm sort of seeing that whole idea of somehow or other break the equation between physical space, between square footage and status, that those two things don't necessarily have to be linked. And the more that work is done on digital platforms, the more it really is kind of almost intrinsically true that physical space is less important.
Right.
But also maybe, I don't know, like it sounds like Joanne's employees didn't buy it, but...
I would say that I've done a lot of research on this, and I'm seeing that certainly the millennial generation doesn't necessarily put the same kind of value on their physical workspace. It's more about the workspace supporting the kind of work that they want to do. So it could possibly be something that we could all grow out of as our generations get older and younger generations move into the leadership positions that and maybe that status symbol will not be that particular physical manifestation will not be the status symbol anymore. It is a tricky one to deal with right now because we have a generation of boomers are in leadership positions and that's what they've always looked forward to. It is something we grapple with.
All right. We're going to take a break in just a second here. I'm going to add David Heinemeier to this conversation. But before we do this, let's grab one more call here from Brittany in Wallingford. Hi, Brittany.
Hi. I love your show.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to call. I have kind of a different perspective on the work environment. I'm a nurse at a hospital. And I was just curious if your guests have any experience with setting up a unit so that it's conducive to the staff that are working there while at the same time best set up for the patients.
So, are we talking about like the nursing station on the floor of a hospital? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that sort of thing. The nursing station compared with the layout of the rooms, the computers in the rooms or not, that sort of thing.
All right, that sounds like it's maybe a subspecialty of your profession. They're all shit. There's somebody special who thinks about that, which is just as well because we need to move on. We're going to take a quick break. One Betsy Kaplan, two Betsy Kaplan, three Betsy Kaplan. Here we go.
It's not your home, but since we never get to see our homes anymore, let's not waste any more time. I want to take you on a date to the copy room. We'll kiss by the fax machine.
We're back. We're talking about workspaces. We're happy to hear from you about workspaces. Our number is 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. In the studio with me are Alex Lopatinsky from JCJ Architecture and David Arai from Mayer Design Group in Hartford. We're going to add to this conversation right now David Heinemeier Hansen, who is a partner in the web-based software development group 37 Signals, and the co-author most recently of Remote. Office Not Required. This is a pretty radical book, at least a pretty radical statement about the value of not being in the office, of finding other places to work, of being able to disperse your workforce over a bunch of different locations. It starts out just talking about the virtues of this and then also gets into refutations of many of the objections that are typically launched against the idea of remote working. But David Heinemeier Hansen, for those of you who haven't read your book and want to get a taste of it, maybe you could just sort of lay out in a nutshell your central argument in favor of the notion of remote working.
Sure, absolutely. So from the company's perspective, the probably most appealing part of remote work is that you get access to the most talented people in the world, regardless of where they live. You're no longer confined to just the commuting distance from your central office. We have a software company that has a office in Chicago, and there's about 5 million people who could drive into that office. Well, 5 million people is a pretty tiny pool compared to the 300 million people in all the U.S. and hundreds of millions more if you count the rest of the world that we can recruit from as well. So it's really great to get access to the best talent, wherever that talent is. Secondly, for the employees who get to work remotely, it's a great way for them to choose the best place for them to live, regardless of where the company they're working for is based. Out of the 40 people we have working at the company, 70% work remotely. Lots of them work in small towns that are not otherwise associated with sort of a tech business, that's what we're in. We have people in Tennessee, we have people in Idaho, we have people in small towns in Canada, we have a couple of people in the UK, we have one guy in Russia, and a few people in Europe. And it allows people to really optimize their life around where their family is, where their friends are, where their hobbies are best pursued, not just, oh, I have to be within a commuting distance of an office.
I'm going to just interrupt you for
finally,
a second. David, I'm just going to interrupt you for a second. Actually, one of the drawbacks for remote working sometimes is bad phone connections. I'm just going to see if we can boost your phone up a little bit while I'm talking to our guests in studio. Obviously, David and Alex, this is a trend that you're familiar with, this sort of notion that at least some people, some of the time in some offices, don't really need to be in the offices. They can work almost anywhere. I mean, there are upsides and downsides to that. As somebody who works remotely a lot, I can tell you, you really are never not working. It starts when you roll out of bed, and it ends when you're rolling into bed. But I mean, how do you look at that trend? And obviously, you have to incorporate it into some of the thinking that you do. I mean, David, maybe you can start us off on that.
You know, we do some remote working out of our office. We have a VPN. I can do basically anything I can do in my office, I can do out of my living room. You know, but there's limitations to what I can do because of the nature of my profession. And how I have to interact with my employees and my peers, I can't do everything remotely. So I think it's not – I don't know that it's the end-all answer to decentralize entirely. I think it's definitely an option, but it really, again, like office space, like the person who wants the little bunker versus the person who wants the big, gigantic space, it's a personal thing, and it's based on the personality of the individual because not everyone can sit at home and focus on work. They're gonna get distracted by other things, and there's days it happens to me, and I have a vested interest in my company. It's my company, so I have a vested interest to work as hard as I can. But there are days that I try to work out of the house, and it just doesn't happen. There's just too many other things happening.
You know, Alex, one of the arguments that David Heinemeier Hansson, and we'll go back to him in just a second, that David Heinemeier Hansson makes in his book is that offices are, as he calls them, interruption factories. That part of the problem is that work is segmented into lots of little things anyway. We have all sorts of things nibbling at us, competing for our attention. And if you're in an office, it actually decreases your opportunity to focus long term and do any kind of deep thinking about a problem that you're having. First of all, is that a problem that can be to any degree designed out of the office environment?
I think that's it's a bigger question. And the question really is, what is it that you have to do to get your particular job done? If it does require a lot of thinking and a lot of quiet, uninterrupted time, then the space that we design has to support that. And that may be an office with a door that you close. And it also, I think, depends on what your organization is and what it is that you do. What's your business? Is your business the kind of business that requires individuals to be in an office, to collaborate, to physically be in the same space together? Or can you do the remote work that you can focus on, do your quiet, uninterrupted thinking work, and then come back to a larger group to collaborate in, which can either be in a physical space or it can be done electronically. It can be done through WebExing or video conferencing or FaceTiming or however you want to look at it, which speaks to the different types of technology that's out there to help us do our work.
You know, David Heinemeier Hansson, one of the things that you say in your book is very similar to what Alex and David just said, which is that when people work remotely, you can, to a certain degree, really judge them on the work they really do. That ultimately, the question isn't how much time do you spend on Facebook when I'm walking by your terminal. The question really is, what is your job? What amounts to a full day of work from somebody? And you say that's almost easier to judge if you're not dealing with the physical person.
It really is, because when you're in person with somebody else, it's so easy to get distracted about all the other things. Oh, do I like this person? Do we root for the same sports team? Or all these other factors that are important and a key part of sort of the culture of a company. But you really should be looking at the work as well. And what we try to say is supervise the work, not the person. If you're happy with the output somebody's producing, if you're happy with the work that they're making, why do you care where they're making that work happens from. Does it really matter to you as a business owner whether they're sitting in an office chair from 9 to 5 or whether they're working from a home office or even from a coffee shop or somewhere else where that feels good for them? What you're trying to optimize, in my mind, is to get your employees in a situation where they're the most productive that they can possibly be. For some, absolutely, that's the office. It's fine to have a hybrid model. We have a very nice office in Chicago, and we take the entire company there about two or three times a year, so everybody sort of gets to hang out and have that social connection. And then everybody goes back home and do the best work that they can do from their home office.
Of course, some of that's predicated. Actually, let me at the beginning of the show, David, before you joined us, I read the first half of an email we got from somebody named Adam, who just wrote about how much he really hates the office building where he works. It's just a completely soul eviscerating place for him, full of sad people, he said. Here's the second half. He says, and since I don't take naps and play guitar for a living, I can't work at home either. So I've carved out a table at the local Starbucks where I can work in my gym shorts and be constantly misperceived as an unemployed personal trainer. But the Starbucks has everything my office lacks: caffeine-fueled creativity, inspiration aplenty, you got to afford the coffee, you know, a battalion of young people working behind the bar, and lots of quality snacks. The open, social, kinetic atmosphere motivates me to do the kind of work that's expected of me, which is kind of the point, right? But, David, I have two Davids here, so it's complicated, but David Heinemeier Hansen, a lot of that's predicated on the idea that the worker knows the best place to work. It sounds like Adam pretty persuasively has figured out where he can do his best work. But this notion of office not required, of working remotely, means that the worker has to be the person who is the best judge of his or her own productivity. Is that always the case?
I think it really is. The boss can be the judge of whether the work coming out is great or not. That's about supervising that work. But telling somebody where they can do their best work or instructing them to be in a certain place from this hour to that hour and have to suffer through the commute to get there, it's a very paternalistic way of looking at your employees. Bosses are not supposed to be babysitters. They're not supposed to be they're supposed to be leaders. They're supposed to be inspiring. They're supposed to set up a good framework that somebody can have the freedom to design their own sort of work situation and then do great work. Step back, be the arbiter of what is good work and not good work. Don't be the arbiter of where somebody's most productive or what clothes they should wear or when they should work.
You know, some of what we're saying here is predicated on the notion that cyberspace is a place where you can do your work uninterrupted. That cyberspace is, you know, David, you describe in your book offices as interruption factories. And so then there's kind of the notion that, well, if we could work at home or in Starbucks or some remote location working digitally, we can get away from those distractions. I want to put that notion up for grabs here and talk for a moment to Josh Benton. Josh Benton is director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University. Josh Benton recently wrote about sort of the increasing ability of various companies to digitally push information in front of you, information that isn't necessarily the information that you thought you were craving at a given moment. Josh, maybe you could just sort of say a little bit about what you found lately. Who's doing this, quote unquote, well?
Well, you know, it's one thing that has really impacted the news business in particular, which is what we study here. News used to be something that you consumed in a defined period for the most part. You sat down and you read the newspaper at the breakfast table, or maybe you read it when you got home after work if you was an afternoon paper, or you watched the evening news on television. It was based around a habit and a schedule, and that worked up really well, lined up really well with the business models that news organizations had. With digital devices, and particularly with mobile devices, news consumption has sort of spread into being something that happens in bits and pieces throughout the day. And that has led a lot of news organizations to focus on how can we make sure that we get the right news and news information, the right story to the right person at the right time. And that's how, you know, email notifications, push notifications to phones. The piece that I was writing about was about a new feature on the new version of Macintosh operating system, the Mac operating system, that allows news organizations or other companies for that matter to send notifications straight to your computer while you're sitting at your desk in a way that is native to the system. So this pattern of interruption goes against the idea that or is counter to the idea that companies want to get their information in front of you at the right time. Figuring out when that's an interruption and when that's just the right message at the right time is the real challenge.
And is first of all, that is the real challenge. And certainly from a certain point of view, I as a news consumer am kind of happy to be able to find out things pretty fast when somebody at some other place thinks I ought to know about it. But if I'm somebody managing me, maybe I don't like that so much. And it does seem as though if this capacity, this ability to digitally push stuff expands infinitely, you really are kind of heading towards a world of clutter, right? A world in which the signal to noise ratio gets all out of whack.
Well, that's a real risk, but you know, for the most part, these are notifications that people can choose to take on or not to take on. I choose to allow the New York Times to interrupt me whenever it thinks that there's something important that I need to know. If they start doing it too much, then I'll stop. To give an example, the New York Times used to not really differentiate between national and global news and local to New York news. So they would occasionally, I live in Boston, they would send out a notification about something in the New York State Senate. I don't care at all about that. So I was tempted to say, you know what, to heck with it. I can rely on somebody else to give me the global and national news, and I don't need to hear about the New York State Senate. Eventually they changed that because they realized their audience wasn't responding well to that. So, you know, there's a sense in which we have a certain amount of control. You can unsubscribe from those email newsletters. You can choose not to spend your day on Twitter. You can choose to not let your phone make your phone buzz every time someone wants your attention. But it is up to the user to try and figure out the right balance.
Josh Benton, I have to ask, since you're director of the Nieman Journalism Lab at Harvard University, which I've heard so much about but never been to, and since we're doing a show today that's sort of about physical versus digital workspaces, how do you guys sort that one out? Do you have a physical space that encourages a kind of work and contact among fellows, among staff? Are people who work for you and with you mostly remote and visual and, I mean, digital and virtual? How do you sort that whole thing out there?
Sure. I mean, we have a staff that is here in Cambridge in the room that I'm speaking to you from right now, a small staff. And we do think it's useful for a news organization like ours to have very rapid fire bouncing off of ideas. And we've been lucky that it's worked out to have that small core here. But, you know, we have two columnists who write for us from Texas and from California. We have work with a lot of freelance writers and other people around the country and around the world where the communication is done entirely through email and other sorts of electronic forms. You know, I think there are real advantages to having people in a common space. That's not an imaginary thing, but it's certainly true that just as the internet has disrupted geography, it has allowed you know, the sort of remote working that you know, you guys have been talking about to make a lot of sense for a lot of organizations.
All right, what we're going to do is grab a little break here. We'll come back. We've got our architects here in studio, office design people here in studio. We've got David Heinemeier Hansen on the line. Josh, I think, has to get back to the Nieman Journalism Lab. We'll be back after this. I love my cubicle, my little beige cubicle. I love my cubicle, my little cubicle. I love my cubicle, my little prison cubicle. Love you with your emails. Love you with your memo.
I went with a totally virtual workspace, and now I accidentally got digitized into some guy's phone. Can somebody help me get out of here? Oh no, he's butt-dialing me again. I hate when that happens. Stop it! Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan and me, with help from our interns, Tess Aronson and Jackie Lauper. The part of Bill Curry was played by Ricky Gervais. On tomorrow's show, Spooky Legends of Connecticut. And now, back to Colin.
And we also want to thank Tucker Ives for his participation in the intro. And Greg Hill is tweeting for us today. He's doing the tweeting of us and the tweeting of you at WNPR Colin. Do feel free to join in here. As we're heading down the home stretch here, I want to talk a little bit about meetings. We've got Alex Lopatinsky from JCJ Architecture here with us and David Arai from Meyer Design Group in Hartford. Also on the line, we have David Heinemeier Hansen. He's a partner in the web-based software development firm 37 Signals, co-author most recently of Remote, Office Not Required. So, David Heinemeier Hansen, one of the things that you do in your book is offer refutations of a whole series of what you see as essentially fallacious notions about how offices function best. And one of the chapters is called The Magic Only Happens With Everybody in the Room, or something along those lines. And it's one of several different chapters in your book where you really question the value of meetings and meetings where everybody has to be physically present. And I have to say that, I mean, I've worked in places where there were too many meetings and they were big wastes of time. But I also, I don't know, I work now where we have meetings and sometimes the people are on some kind of, you know, some of the people are on this little sort of Charlie's Angels speakerphone, and it's kind of depressing to hear their little voices coming out of that. I mean, explain why it is that you think, you actually say you believe in rationing meetings, so when you actually have one, it means something.
I think that the misconception really is that most businesses need so many wonderful, magical ideas generated every day that we need to be able to sit face-to-face and have all these meetings all the time. I don't think that's true at all. I think most businesses simply cannot absorb that much magic, quote-unquote. At our business, we found that when we get together in person a couple of times a year, we really sit down and have those big, broad-stroke brainstorming sessions. That generates so much idea backlog, and we need the rest of the year just to catch up on that and execute on that. And so that's really the key here, is that the bulk of work is work. It's not talking about all the other things that we could be doing or should be doing. You have to do the things you've decided to do. Otherwise, you're not going to get anywhere. And you really don't need to be physically present to make all that work happen. And even for the sort of brainstorming, freewheeling idea session, the advances in technology has just been staggering. We've been doing remote work for a decade now, and we started out just on those crappy speakerphones that you talked about. Now we mainly use something called Google Hangout, where you can see everybody in high-fidelity video and get a sense of all those nonverbal cues as well, which are, I think, a key part of what people like about meeting in person. So you see the expression on somebody's face. It's not as good as being in person. It's 95% there, but 95% is good enough for the vast majority of time. And for the last 5% of the time where you really need to squeeze that out, just meet up in person. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. As I said, we fly the whole company in about two or three times a year to Chicago. We all meet up. And in between then, we'll have smaller groups who occasionally meet up as well. And so that combination works much better than just having everybody always in the same office, always getting dragged into those long meetings.
We got to get this Google Hangout. We're about to go into a meeting right after this show, and I already know Jonathan and Lori are going to be on that miserable little crappy speakerphone thing. We got to get them on Google Hangout. Well, you know, I mean, speaking of physical cues, I could actually see David Arai's hand move in a way that told me he has something to say about this anyway. One of the things you have to do, obviously, is you have to design for meetings, right?
Yeah, you have to design for meetings, and you have to realize that you know, at least half of communication is visual. Mm. You know, we're sitting here in a studio booth, and Alex and I are both moving around like crazy to make our point when it gets there. And you saw my hand, and so those are the subtle cues that may or may not work when you're working remotely. I think if you have the right kind of video conferencing equipment, you have the right setup, it absolutely works. I've seen it work.
Yeah, and we're definitely seeing a lot more of our clients providing that kind of technology in those meeting spaces to accommodate those different types of workers.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, one of the other trends in business is that I think there's more and more so-called partnering. You know, there's your business, but increasingly smaller job shops hook up and partner just for this particular task or only occasionally. So what is a meeting sometimes suddenly involves other entities besides even your shop. Alex, we have a very limited amount of time left, but, you know, we talked at the beginning about natural lighting. You walked by Heather Brandon, miserable little veal calf stall, but you said, well, you have a window. It's really nice. I'm assuming a meeting room is different, though. Maybe with a meeting room, you want to be a little bit cut off.
Yeah, actually, it really depends on what you're meeting about and what you're trying to accomplish there. Sometimes you do need to close the door and, you know, focus on accomplishing a task as a group and don't need those distractions. And sometimes, you know, you want to be out in the open space, have that sunlight, look out the window, be able to be inspired by your surroundings. So it really depends on the specific task that you want to accomplish as a group.
All right. Well, we have to end the show because we have a meeting. I'm really looking forward to the meeting, actually. I like meetings with this particular group of people. So we'll be meeting with Jim Cutie and Beth Messina and a whole bunch of other people. But it's been fun also meeting with David Arai from Mayer Design Group and Alex Lopatinsky from JCJ Architecture. Also, David Heinemeier Hansen. His new book is called Remote, Office Not Required. It's a manifesto. Josh Benton is director of the Nieman Journalism Lab. Thanks to Betsy for pulling this all together. We'll be back tomorrow with spooky stories from Connecticut. It is, after all, Halloween Day. Cubicle or the cubicle, leave me. I suppose that I got pissed off with the way things were for me.
Always an emergency to fix cause it was broke. And the thing that kept me going was my girlfriend and my jokes. Did I leave the cubicle or the cubicle leave me? Did I leave the cubicle or the cubicle leave me? Did I leave the cubicle or the cubicle leave me? Did I leave the cubicle or the cubicle leave me?
Hi, you've reached the Kyone Wolf hotline. How may I? Hi, yes, I will send that WAV file over right now. I'm sorry about that. Ugh, Kyone, stop mixing up your phone answering jobs.